Hello, everybody. This week we're talking about the movie Parasite.
Hit the music.
Everybody, I'm Michael Flaherty.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty. This is Flaherty's on Films, cute little podcast where we talk about cute little movies.
Just a tiny Michael? Little, yeah.
Well, what are we talking about this week? What is it about?
This movie is called Parasite. Oh, sounds spooky. Here's what it's about. Via IMDb description. Greed and class discrimination threaten the newly formed symbiotic relationship between the wealthy Park family and the destitute Kim clan.
I didn't know they used the word symbiotic in there. I was just, before we got on the air, Sam was saying the director said something like, well, really, they're both parasites. And it's like, if they're both parasites, it's a symbiosis. It says so right in the description.
What's the problem? So it's wrong then.
I mean, it's not, because it's symbolism and not science, but whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway,
And when Romeo is all like, Juliet is the sun, aren't you like, no, she's a person. Get your fucking facts straight. Fucking idiot. Write a second draft.
What's the question? Exactly how I watch Romeo and Juliet. Michael, have you seen Parasite before?
Yeah, I did it. I saw it maybe a year ago. For some reason, I tried to watch it once, watched about 5 minutes of it, got bored, and then my Amazon Prime subscription or my Amazon rental went out. But then I watched it again. This is a great story. And here's how the story ends.
Oh, I cannot wait for the punchline.
All the way through, and I really, really liked it a lot.
Whoa, that was, what a twist.
So two rentals overall. Let's review. Colleen, have you ever seen this one? Well, you've seen it this time, but is this your first viewing?
I have not seen it before. My friend David had seen it, and he said it was super weird. And he usually says that to me about films I don't want to see. So I was put off by it.
Isn't he a connoisseur of weird films?
No, he loves weird films. So that's how he knows. He'll say like, that was really weird. I liked it. Is a code word for me to not like a film.
Gotcha.
But spoiler. See now, Michael, this is a twist.
Yeah.
I did like it.
See,
I liked it very much.
Our stories are going to get better and better as we go through the podcast.
I don't know if they can get much better than that.
I don't know.
But let's see.
That was a pretty good one. Do we have any more opening thoughts?
I want to say that I was struck by this movie because it was so different and interesting. But at the end of it, I wasn't quite sure why I liked it so much. So I just want you to know, Michael, and the audience at home, that I've thought about it so much.
Yeah.
Boy, do I have some thoughts. But let's go to our first segment.
What is that saying? I have no idea.
Could you check your watch?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's time. It's
what time?
It's bam.
Oh, is it time for Sam?
Sure is. This is the part of the show where Samantha Norman will tell us some facts about the film Parasite.
In 2013, Bong Joon-ho started writing a play. For inspiration, he thought about a job he had as a young adult tutoring rich kids. According to Joon-ho, I got this feeling that I was infiltrating the private lives of complete strangers.
Sorry, is this the director? Because I don't know anybody's names.
This is the director, okay. Yes. Every week I would go into their house and I thought how fun it would be if I could get all my friends to infiltrate the house one by one. He started writing the story, but the first line he got him thinking about camera positions. So, very quickly, Parasite became a screenplay. He had just finished working on Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
And kind of got to the point where he was going to be working on his next film. So, he started calling around to different actors. And many of the cast had already worked with him and agreed to sign on to the project without even knowing exactly what the story was. Before filming could start, the two family homes needed to be created. The Parks family yard and first floor were built on an empty lot. So, picture just the first floor of the house. Everything you see when you're outside was just green screen. and then the yard. Just those two things were actually built on the lot. Hmm. All the upstairs and downstairs rooms were created on a soundstage. Although Jun-ho had a lot of ideas for the layout of the house, the final design would come down to production designer Lee Ha-jing. Ha-jing would have the difficult challenge of creating a house that was designed by a famed architect, but also a house that worked well for camera setup.
Pause. Colleen, would you want to live in that house?
Hell yeah.
I mean, it's very open.
I like open. Now, my couch configuration would make more sense. Yeah. We'll get into that later.
Yeah, we're going to have a long part about that.
So, I mean, it's going to be half the podcast. It's going to be about this fucking living room. But I watch a lot of grand designs. They always have those big cement houses with huge ass windows. I think I could see myself living there.
The lawn's a little boring. You know, if I have $1 million, maybe you'd want something that's not just a square.
You know what you put in that fucking square?
What's
that? Golf course.
No, you sold me.
Mean, it's perfect for it. So it's perfect. I think, and you look out over the mini golf course every day. It's a beautiful view.
That's true.
That's what you want. So
yeah, I do like that big window.
Do you want to live in that house?
Yeah, I mean, it's just so serene. I love how it's like there's like a city, and then you go into like upstairs, and like you like escape into the house. I think that's so cool.
It's very cool.
It's a cool house. It makes me sad that it's not a real house.
Yeah, that's too bad.
All right, we can resume the segment now.
Well, I will say this. So because they had to figure out with the big open windows. So the idea behind the big window is that the architect would want to be looking out into his beautiful garden every day.
But it wasn't even a beautiful garden. It was just grass.
I'm assuming that the architect had a beautiful garden. I don't know.
That's a British-English thing, Michael, is garden means yard.
Oh, okay. But it's not beautiful.
It's very green.
People like that.
It's plain.
But then also, I lost my train of thought. Hold on.
Edit. Whoa. Edit.
Edit. So they had this beautiful big window, but they were filming inside this house. So they actually, like, the designer had to go there, like, every day through a week to see where the sun would be at different times so they could figure out how to film because there'd be so much sunlight shining in at different points.
Sure. Oh, yeah. So. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. That movie. It was interesting reading about it just because in his mind, he wanted to build this house. Well, first of all, the director created this crazy ass idea for a house, and they had to kind of tone him down because it had to be a rich house for sure, but it also had to be somewhat realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And then
did he want water slides or a fire pole?
Well, that's just reasonable.
Yeah, those are just reasonable things that help your kids.
But the production designer, like, his main focus was, like, how can we best film in this? But he had to also, like, have in mind that this was an architect's house. So it was just kind of an interesting balance of how he had to create that.
A fire pole really gets in the way.
Yeah, that's true. Especially if you're looking at your garden.
Yeah, but does it get in the way more so than stairs? I'm just saying.
That's true. Much thinner. Much thinner than stairs.
So we have the Parks house. Now
you
for
can't
the
practice
house,
your stripping on stairs. Anyway, come on, continue, Sam.
So for the Kim's house, their semi-basement apartment and neighborhood was built in a water tank. Oh, so it was all set. They did go to kind of poor neighborhoods and kind of get an idea of it. And apparently it was really detailed. Like they had stories for all of the neighbors and whatnot. But it was a whole set. Their whole neighborhood. And it was built. It looked good.
Explains how
that
they could
not
flood
look
the
like
whole,
a set.
Explains how they could flood the whole thing.
Right. So they built it in a water tank so it could be flooded. And for the record, the sewage water was very, very clean water with facial mask mud in it for coloring. So it was actually a very moisturizing day on set for the cast.
That's delightful.
These, right? Like such sad scenes. Like, oh, my skin is glowing.
Right?
This was a funny thing while we were watching it. I can't remember who said something like, Who just lives in basements like that? And this is a weird thing about Washington, D.C. Like, that's a ton of apartments, is these sub-basement apartments. So I thought that was pretty common.
Did I say that?
Maybe you said that. You're like, what kind of apartment is like that?
I don't think I said that. That doesn't seem like me.
Somebody's there.
Like, I'm the only one left because mom and dad lived in one of those apartments.
What if they forgot? What if they're so far removed from this situation that they're like,
right, anyway, trying to remove that memory.
Mom does like have a little mild PTSD from that because of all the rats.
All right. I'm going to accuse her of saying it then.
Okay, cool.
The film was shot in only 77 days with a budget of the equivalent of 11 to 13 million US dollars. Couple of fun facts about the filming of the project or of the film. So in the film, there is a big scene where the Parks family calls and requests that a dish be made in a hurry. The dish is called Ramdon. Now, it's an actual dish, but its name, which I will spell, J-J-A-P-A-G-U-R-I.
Jaja Bakuri.
Was deemed too difficult for English speakers to understand. So what they did is, the dish is just a mix of two noodles, ramen and udon. So they just...
Can I tell you my fact? Sorry.
Combine the two. You can after I finish.
I hate not interrupting. Go on.
So then the other thing is that the mom asks for it to be mixed in with hanyu, which is one of the most expensive meats in the world. So that was kind of like this idea that this poor, like, basically college student food of just noodles mixed together, that they would add like this really expensive meat to.
It's the Korean equivalent of Kobe beef was the kind of meat she was talking about, which is,
yeah.
So the only thing I looked up was like, I just wanted the perspective of someone Korean telling us what we might've missed. And the thing about that dish, he's like, imagine somebody combine Kraft macaroni and cheese and hamburger helper into a dish, but for some reason that combination became like a pop culture sensation and like celebrities eat it and like it's a big deal. So that's this dish. For some reason, two instant crappy dishes that poor people eat became like a huge thing.
Because of this movie or separate?
But separate, before this. So that's why the rich people would have this in the first place. Why they would even have those instant noodles to combine at all.
Oh, that's fun.
So
yeah,
that's all I know.
So then I have one more fact about the filming of this. So there's a song that the two siblings sing as they are walking to the Parks house the first time. So the brother is bringing the sister in and she has to remember all of these facts about her life. Like
about her backstory.
Jessica. And she kind of sings it in a song. Well, the song she's singing is actually a common song that children in South Korea sing to help them memorize things.
That's
actually a very common song.
Oh, I like that.
Speaking of songs, the song that's first played over the credits was actually written by Junho and sung by Woo Sik Chow, who is the brother, the main character. The song's name translates to 540 years, which according to John Woo's calculations, that's how long it would take for Kim Ki-woo to be able to afford the Parks house.
Oh.
Which is more important than you think if you haven't seen the movie, and we'll explain why later.
Yes. So Parasite would premiere at the 2019 Cannes Film Festival on May 21st.
Is that a Korean film festival or not?
No, it's Italian.
Isn't it French? Oh, it's Italian?
No, wait, it's French. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, you're all good. I was just second guessing myself.
Michelle is yelling wordlessly.
It would open in South Korea before spreading around the world. So you guys remember that $11 million budget?
Mm-hmm.
Well, your question of the week is, how much did it make worldwide at the box office?
I'm going to say $90 million.
I was going to say 50 million.
266.9 million dollars.
Yay, Michael.
This film did get a boost. They call it like the Academy Award bump, where like view or going to the box office like went 200% over like after it won the Academy Award. So
same thing happened to Moonlight.
Yeah, it's just one of those little bumps they get. A big fan of black and white films, John Woo would premiere Parasite Black and White Edition at the International Film Festival Rotterdam in January 2020. And I think it's on the DVDs too, so you can see it both ways.
No thanks.
Okay. This film would be nominated for 6 Academy Awards, and it would win 4. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, and Best International Feature Film. Parasite is the first non-English language film to win Best Picture in Academy Award history. It's also the first South Korean film to be nominated, and the second East Asian film to be nominated for Best Picture, the other one being Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It was also nominated for 2 additional that it didn't win, which was Best Film Editing and Best Production Design. And according to the director, he was particularly happy about those because he felt that the great technicians and artists in the Korean film industry really deserved the recognition.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
I thought the film editing was actually very good.
And then on top of all of that, this is the first film since 1955 to win both the Palme d'Or at the film festival, the Cannes Film Festival, and the Academy Award. It's
look at Michelle's cringing at your French.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, Michelle. I don't speak French.
I'm so sorry. I should not be on here yet. But I have
Michelle, how do you pronounce it? Do you know?
So it's called Cannes. Because it's in Cannes, France.
It's got an S right on it, Michelle.
Palme d'Or literally means like golden palm leaf, I'm pretty sure. Or the golden palm. And it's like, it's a higher honor than an Oscar.
Yes. So this is one of only 3 films to win both.
And Sam, it's Baguette. Just for future.
So,
but Jenny, dummy.
So something that I
really want to dress up in a suit, go to a restaurant, like, oh, can I get a baguette, please? 2 baguettes for the table.
Michael, what restaurant do you go to where you order a baguette?
That's the thing. You'd be like, it's on the table currently.
It's just bread. Don't be weird.
Bread's on the table. You don't need to order it. Nice suit.
I guess at Noodles and Company, you do order a little baguette.
Yeah.
You do. Mine is delicious. So another interesting fact I learned. So Parasite won Best Picture at the Oscars, but it wasn't even nominated for Best Picture at Golden Globes. The reasoning behind this is because in the Golden Globes rules, dialogue in the films must be 50% English.
What?
Yeah.
That's weird.
So they were not allowed to be nominated even.
That is a weird rule, actually.
And there's another rule. Like, they don't have to be white, but...
Sorry, I love rule number 80. They don't have to be white, but... Dot, 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 and that's the whole thing.
But, come on.
You know.
It'd be weird if they weren't.
And my final fact for you guys today. It has been announced that there will be an HBO limited series based on the film where the director is going to be an executive producer along with Adam McKay. And it will be the stories in between the sequences in the film.
What? That sounds weird as heck. Isn't Adam McKay a comedy guy?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm Googling him because I'm like, is that guy? I mean, he did The Big Short, which is...
Yeah, but he also did Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers.
Yep, right.
I will check that out because that sounds bizarre as hell.
I also will.
I'm very curious. I don't think it'll go well. Sam, thank you very much for that segment. That was the last fact, right?
That was the last fact.
Thank you so much. That was bam.
Time for Sam. I googled Parasite jokes. You want to hear some?
Please, lay it on me.
So I wanted to watch that Parasite movie, but every torrent had nothing but leeches.
All right, one more.
Okay, one more. It's ironic that Parasite won, because there wasn't even a host for the Oscars.
All right, one more.
Oh, that's it.
Okay. This next segment is called Critics Corner, and we're going to hear what the critics have to say. As far as I remember, I think the critics liked it. It did win Best Picture.
The critics liked it a lot.
All right.
I couldn't find one negative critics review.
Dang.
So, I mean, I found some more tepid ones, but none that were out and out. This movie sucks. Jun Ho's work is as playful as it is sincere and revelatory. Revelatory?
I don't even know what that means. It revels.
You know, reveal. Oh. It reveals, but it's an adjective. Oh. He'll make you feel at home and then rip the rug right out from under you.
It does do that. Rug ripping.
Says Clarice Lowry of the Independent UK.
Expect some rug ripping. That's my review. This is from Theodicy, who's writes for Amazon Reviews. I get some of the issues of class struggle, but it seems to condone murder. It is a very sad and depressing movie suggesting that poor people need to have no moral conscience because they are desperate. No redemption, no soul, murderous resentment and jealousy left me feeling worse about humanity as a whole. I mean, it is kind of a bummer, you know.
It's a bummer.
There's some sadness. Yeah.
If the movie is a Rorschach of who you identify as parasite and host, it's a test you're just as likely to fail.
Wow.
All right. A film-going experience that refuses to fit in any box and forces viewers to breathe the dangerous air outside of it, too, says Leah Greenblatt, who I do not want to hang out with at parties.
I like her name. This is from Jack Crane, this next review, and this is an Amazon review. I don't believe the accolades this film is getting are genuine. I am someone... So this guy's an expert. We're about to find out. I am someone who watches a lot of foreign TV and film stuff and has no issues with subtitles. This was just bad.
Does this like sound like he's like, I have plenty of foreign film friends.
I have many VHSs. This is just bad. It's for Korean audiences. Anyone Western who claims that they love this is lying.
Oh, no, he sees right through me.
He sees right through us. He would know. He has a lot of these films.
Right.
You're just not going to... this is a great sentence. You're just not going to get this movie. This is the equivalent of something like American Pie to Korean audiences.
And he's seen a lot of foreign films.
And
so he knows
a lot of foreign films. He just doesn't, they wouldn't get the cultural touchstone American Pie is to us. I feel like the whole affair is an IQ test. What the? Anyone who actually believes that this is good is not too sharp and can't see the forest from the trees. Don't think he knows what that expression means. What Perhaps. An interesting review.
Very interesting. I mean, I did really like this film, but maybe I'm not that bright, so maybe he's got my number.
Shit, I read the last review. It's tuned from now. It's so good.
This is Danny Lay of the Financial Times. Why does the Financial Times do movie reviews? A film that always has two thoughts in its head at once, a spectacular epic and tightly wound chamber piece, chicly sophisticated, brutal as a hammer. Michael, would you like to read
the next review? Yeah, so this is a great review. This is by no one. It's anonymous. And I feel like I agree with most of this review. Here it goes. I dislike that it is in Chinese. Can I get my money back? So that's a great review of the film Parasite.
I do like when you read the Amazon one-star reviews, it's like some people think this is the way to dispute a purchase for Amazon.
just Amazon's reading it like, I'll see if who's upset.
Yeah. Let's go to our next segment.
Fan favorite.
It's called Favorite, Least Favorite. Michael, what is your least favorite part of this film?
Let's see. Do you have one? Because I haven't thought of mine.
I do. I don't like the protagonist hooking up with the super young girl. I don't dislike a lot about this film, and I almost feel like I'm kind of reaching. I just don't really get the point of it. I feel like I miss it a bit. So for those who haven't seen the film, our protagonist gets this job from his college friend, his friend who's in college. They're not in college together. because he was tutoring this girl and he's like, I'm going to wait till she's 18 to ask her out because she's so beautiful. And I'm like, cool, great. I feel like as viewers, we're supposed to be like, what an honorable guy that he's doing that. And then his friend just hooks up with said 15-year-old who definitely looks 15 or 16. I guess she could be 16. Didn't love it.
Yeah, I don't. I feel like I don't have a problem with it because I don't feel like the film tries to suggest that it is okay. Like,
yeah, I don't know what the film's trying to say about. Which again, I am reaching. I don't think it's that bad. I just didn't love it.
Like, that's just part of the texture of all the other events that are going on. Like, it's there, but it's not.
Yeah.
Something to focus on.
I guess my other least favorite part isn't real, but yeah. Let me just. On this podcast, you and I have talked about how sometimes movies are making a real point,
yeah,
or have a very strong theme that can be easily misconstrued. And if you can misconstrue it that badly, especially in toxic ways, that's still the fault of the filmmaker. Like, that's still a strike against the film. Just because someone missed the point badly doesn't... Anyway... I think you could with this film, but I don't care because I like it so much.
Yeah. Can we break with the format just a bit? Because I feel like I just want to talk about the movie.
Let's do it.
Because like, I feel like when we started this podcast, you were like, I like it, but I really, really had to think about why. Right. Yeah. And one of my things is that this movie... If you read anything about it, if you read any kind of description, it's like, here's the movie about class struggles. And that's the strong theme. And I feel like if you told me, hey, Mike, do you want to watch this movie about poverty? I'd be like, no, that movie sounds boring as shit. I feel like the movie has a good theme and the theme makes the film better. But the reason why I really like this film is just for the really basic reasons why a film would be good. It has characters who are really... They're obviously not goody two-shoes. Like, they're kind of bad
engaging,
people.
They're engaging, though.
Yeah, but they're very... They're Tony Soprano-esques. You know, they're very... I want to see what they're doing.
I might say they're more charming than Tony Soprano.
It's very possible. The film is going in many places that I don't expect... while keeping me engaged the whole time. And I feel like one fault that a film could have by going that direction, by being so twisty, is that it just goes nowhere. But I really, really like how it ends a lot, especially the last like 10 seconds of the film.
Well, as much as it's twisty and it doesn't go where you think, it is thematically consistent in a way that I like.
So all I'm saying is I think it's really good, but not in a way where I have to think about it. It's just like good for the normal reasons.
So I think I agree with you. I think it's good for all the normal reasons. But when I finished watching it, there was something about it that made me say, wow, this, like, it really touched me a lot.
Yeah.
Like, not only was this entertaining, but I was like, this is one of the better movies I've seen. I'll go into why. So I think that... Okay, a lot of the one-star reviews were like, wow, this really villainizes poor people. So before we'll go into the summary a little more, but for those who haven't seen it, it's about this poor family that kind of cons their way into being the entire staff for this incredibly wealthy family. And, I mean, they're just kind of taking advantage of them. And then it goes fucking sideways. Just bananas.
Well,
right?
You can say why. I mean, we're going to get into it.
I mean, they're... Because there's like a man living in their basement, but that's not pertinent to what I'm about.
Oh, okay, okay.
So there's this. So I work in politics, and we do a lot of things to deal with poverty. And you know, there's always this bullshit stuff from Republicans about how poor people should act a certain way. But at the end of the day, even the most liberal among us, you kind of have this idea of who is deserving poor. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think this was one of these movies that really outlined, sorry, I should have written this down or something.
No, feel it. Feel it out.
I'm feeling it. Feel it out. Just, being poor is fucking hard.
Yeah.
And it strips you of everything. It strips you of your dignity, of your place in the world. There's this amazing monologue in it from the dad where he talks about you should never even make plans or expect anything out of life because you're going to be wrong and it's going to just be worse. And that's what being poor is. And that's why that kind of hopelessness seeps into your every day in a way that makes you not a perfect protagonist in your story, right? It makes, I mean, you'll do criminal things. You'll care less about how you hurt other people because that's how pervasive this is. And I loved in this movie how the rich family was technically good, right?
Yeah.
They were kind people. They cared about their kids. And they even had a line like, well, it's easy to be nice when you're rich. Because it is. Because it's easy to be a kind. They were good in a way that never, you know, got in the way of their power. They were good when they didn't have to question anything about their life or how they affected other people. Basically, right?
Yeah.
And that is what class struggle is for most of us. Like, it's just this thing that exists that we don't really talk about. And we're all basically good people. So what's the big deal? And that's kind of what it is. I thought it was so well done and so subtle and interesting inside this, what is also just a super entertaining movie.
So here's what might be my favorite thing about the film. Mm-hmm. So this movie... If you look at like the poster of it or like the title or like if you just see an image or if you just hear about it, you might think that it's a horror film, and it's kind of not for me.
It's not horrifying.
It's like, yeah, but it's like it's really dynamic. And that's kind of what I like about it. It's different things at different times. And it's like it starts off kind of funny and relatable.
I laughed out loud more than once.
Yeah, I mean, they're just kind of a poor family, just kind of getting by. And then while they're executing their cons, like, it's kind of just fun and lighthearted, you know?
Yeah.
It
also made me really want to learn more about South Korea.
And then it gets sort of horrifying and thrilling. And then when the family escapes from the house and they go through the flood and then they're all inside the gymnasium and the dad gives that speech, for like 20 minutes in that period, it just like feels so real. I think it's because you see the gym and all the people who are like from that district and they're all like in there. And it just like makes the whole film feel more grounded. And then it just escalates and then
just goes off the rails
to this really thrilling climax. I just fucking love it. This is so random, but there was a YouTuber talking about the film Titanic recently who described Titanic as a romance that turned into a disaster movie. And I feel like I like that changing of tone.
This is a funny heist movie that turns into...
to like a thrilling but really sincere movie.
Yes.
A poignant thriller. And I like it. I feel like they enhance each other. Like, it's not like these are two... It's not like they're both good. They both make each other really great.
Yes. And I just want to say, like, I think it's been clear, if anyone has listened to this podcast before, that you and I are incredibly picky about movies trying to make a point. Like, we hate self-righteous movies. We hate movies that are in your face. We hate movies that don't have a theme or that fail to make their point at all.
Yeah.
So it's like, this movie so perfectly hits that sweet spot for me. I've been recently watching another great philosophical art piece, Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Sure.
Which, for those who don't know, it's they're at this wormhole to the Gamma Quadrant in a non-Federation space. And there's this great scene where a Federation officer is talking to this guy who's like basically a terrorist against the Cardassians, who are, they're not great, okay?
Okay.
And this guy gives a speech and he's like, look, man, the Federation, on Earth, you have no poverty, no war, and you have everything you need. It's easy to be a saint when you want for nothing. And that's, I feel like, a really important aspect of this movie. Because it's really good.
I was going to say, I feel like, back to your earlier point, like, oh, we're picky about movies trying to make points. I think what maybe makes this movie pull it off is that that's not all it's banging on.
Right.
If that's all they had, if that was the one card in their deck, it was like, here's the thing we noticed about poor people. Be like, get out of here.
Right. If this movie wasn't trying to do social commentary, I would still like this movie.
Right.
Like, I think it was very good. It was so surprising and fun.
The social commentary enhances what's already there, which enhances the characters and the situations.
the reason I'm harping about it is because I think I've seen a lot of movies that are like beautiful and well done and good, but this movie just got to me. Like, it was just the final nail in the good movie coffin.
Have you seen a lot of South Korean films?
I have seen a few.
Which ones?
Mostly horror, though. Mostly horror or action films.
Which ones? Right?
Hang on. Let me look it up.
You have a list of films you've seen? I've seen a lot. For some reason, early on Netflix, they used to have like a bunch of Korean films.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So I mean, there are also a lot of thriller and action movies. There's one called like The Man from Nowhere, which is just the movie Taken, except better. Except you could imagine the lead actor could actually do those stunts.
Train to Busan, Extreme Job, which was not good.
I have also seen this director's movie Mother, which is very thrilling and very, very good. I want to see Memories of a Murder, which apparently is like really similar to the film Zodiac.
I saw it, but I guess I don't remember. Colossal was a South Korean film with American actors in it.
Oh, I like you didn't like that movie.
No.
All I was gonna say is like I think that culture, or just like seeing a movie.
Oh, The Tower.
What's that one?
Hang on.
What's The Tower?
But anyway, go on with what you were saying.
Just like seeing a movie that's not American with totally unrecognizable actors. I just really like that experience.
I do, but I think this movie was so good, I didn't feel like sophisticated watching it. Like, it was just such a good movie. I didn't feel like, oh, I'm so cool watching a foreign film, and what a smart thing we spent our time doing. It was just so entertaining.
Right. Yeah, because it doesn't feel smart. It feels kind of silly. I mean, even when there's a tense moment where, like, the parents are having sex, but they're all hiding and they're not trying not to get caught.
Ugh.
But just like, oh, the father smells bad. And then the father like lifts his shirt, like smells himself. Like, oh, do I smell bad? Like, I feel like, I don't know. I don't ever feel like the movie takes itself too seriously, I guess.
Well, actually, with the smelling thing, it felt like it took itself very seriously at the end there.
Well, in a guy, I liked that part, though.
I also very much like that.
All right, so I don't know what my point is. All right. Do you have more to say?
No, I don't know. There were just a lot of details that I really liked. Like, the kid's fascination with American Indians. It just felt so tone deaf in a way that was so like indicative of the way the family was, right? Like the Park family, they just don't think about these things because they don't have to.
Totally.
Anyway, yeah, let's just go into it.
All right. Do you want me to start?
Yes.
All right. The Kim family, father Kim Tech, the mother, oh, I'm going to say all these names wrong, Chung Suk, the daughter Kim Jung, and the son Kum Wo. I feel like we're just going to Berenstain Bears this and just call them mother, father, brother, sister.
Well, maybe poor mother, poor father, rich dad, rich mom.
Man, we're racist, right? This doesn't feel right. I live in a small semi-basement apartment in Banjiha. They have a low-paying temporary jobs as pizza box folders and struggle to make ends meet.
And I feel like you guys did not acknowledge when I mentioned that I'm so good at folding pizza boxes. I can do it in like 2 seconds.
I mean, so, can anybody? I mean, are you really good?
I worked at Pizza for 3 years and then Toppers for a year. So I'm really good.
I did it too. I worked at a pizza place for not 3 years.
You should. Yeah, 15. That was when I started.
All right. Yeah, so you gotta watch. All right. University student Min, a friend of Ki-woo's, the brother, gives the family a scholar's rock meant to promise wealth. Leaving to study abroad, he suggests that Ki-woo take over his job as an English tutor for the daughter of the wealthy Park family, Da-hae. That's just the family. Ki-woo poses as
That's the daughter.
Oh, I see. Ki-woo poses as a university student and is hired by the Parks, who calls him Kevin.
So this is also a thing. South Koreans who study abroad, that's a status symbol in the first place because it's super expensive to be an international student in America, even, no matter what university you go to. And if they regularly interact with English speakers, it's just sort of a Korean thing that they don't expect English speakers to be able to pronounce their name. So they just have an American name.
So we've already started a con here because like he has to pretend he has all this background and he's like a master English person and his sister like forges some documents for him.
Right. In such a way that's like, she's so talented, which I think is a big part of it. This is a very brief summary, so we can just talk about it.
Yeah.
So how the sister poses as an art teacher later, which we'll get into. But the son, they make a whole point of how he's just faking being an art prodigy. Mm-hmm. Can I say that? Yeah. Where his sister says, sometimes he'll just pretend to have a moment of inspiration, but he's just doing a bit. Like, and it, I mean, it's fun because it's funny, but it's also like, well, that kid probably is going to get farther in life than this woman who actually fucking is great at art because she can't afford art school.
She was definitely my favorite character, the sister.
She was the best. The Kim family recommends one another as unrelated, highly qualified workers to take over as servants of the parks. Which, again, yeah, so this is like the dog-eat-dog world where they just definitely crowd out these other low-paid people so that they can get in. Ki-woo tutors and seduces Gross, the young daughter. Ki-jung poses as Jessica, an art therapist to the park's young son. I loved that scene where she was explaining how disturbed he is.
I was trying to think of who the best actress is, and it might be the mom. Her like
I agree.
Naive like face and all of her reactions.
It's very the dad frame the protagonist frames Mr. Park's chauffeur for having sex in the car by leaving her underwear there. Oh, sorry, the daughter does that.
Yeah.
And then the dad is hired to replace him. And then finally they oust the old housekeeper and have their mom come in by exploiting her peach allergy in a way that was filmed in such a fun way. Like imagine you're watching Ocean's 11. That's how it was filmed to me.
Do you just saw this film? Do you remember like what you were thinking? Do you remember like, what is this movie? Do you know what I mean? Like, what was your reaction to the film at this point?
At this point, I was like, "Whoa, this is like a fun heist movie." Like, oh, they're just doing fun cons.
Oh, this is like a fun little fun movie. Cool.
Yeah, and I was wrong. I was wrong to think that. But I didn't. Everyone had said it gets weird, so I didn't think that was going to hold out. I was not fooled.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was Sam was like, "I saw the trailer, and I still could not figure out what it is." But it's like it's really, really hard to describe. Like,
it is.
Yeah. All right. So the Parks leave on a camping trip. Have we iterated this? The whole family is now working for this rich family. They've all conned their way into the jobs. They're all pretending to be these other people who don't know each other, but they all have jobs.
Yeah, except the dad conning into the job was the funniest one to me because the dad like had a bunch of chauffeur experience. So it's like he conned his way into a job he was very qualified for.
So, you know, what's going to happen next in this movie, right? We got these four. I mean, are we done? Is this movie over? When the Parks leave on a camping trip, the Kims revel in the luxuries of the park residence.
This made me feel like I would be such a bad criminal because they were just like getting drunk and making messes. And I'm like, oh God, I would just be so nervous the whole time.
So, while they're like drunk and partying and having a good time and just laughing it up, they hear the doorbell ring and they look and see who it is. And it turns out it's the old housekeeper and the mom. So every family member conned their way into having a job there. And the mom conned her way into being the housemaid. And they did that by getting the old housemaid out, but she's back. She just rung the doorbell. And the housemaid said, oh, I just left something in the house. I'll be right back. Just let me in. It'll be 2 seconds. So all the family's kind of freaking out because they didn't expect anybody to be there. But they let her in and she goes downstairs and they're like, what the hell is she doing down there? So the mom goes downstairs to look at what the housemaid is doing. And she reveals a secret door that goes down to a very secret basement. It is through a hidden entrance to an underground bunker created by the house's architect and previous owner. It is revealed that Moon Gwang's, that's the housemaid, his husband, has been secretly living underneath the home for over 4 years, hiding from loan sharks. Chun-Suk refuses Moonguak's pleas to help Junsae remain in the bunker. So yeah, the family was like, not nice. They're not, no, like, we're not going to help you. No, get out of here.
So the reason she knows about the bunker, but the family doesn't, is because she was the housemaid to the original architect who lived in the house. And the architect like recommended her. And apparently the architect put in this bunker because he was afraid of, you know, North Korea attacking, but he was embarrassed about the bunker. So he hid it when he was selling the house. So that's the discrepancy there.
So the mom is like, well, now that I've discovered you in this bunker, get the fuck out. And at the same time, the entire family, who's just for fun kind of eavesdropping on this whole situation, all tumble down the stairs and reveal themselves to the maid. The maid then realizes that the whole family are crooks. And she like films them on her phone and says, I'm going to send this to the wife unless you do what I say.
Right. They did this also a whole other bit, which like makes me think it'd be funnier if I knew more about South Korea and wasn't such an idiot, where they're pretending to be North Korean news reporters. And
oh,
I was
yeah.
like, I bet that would be, I mean, it was funny to me because I know a little bit, but I'm like, I bet it would be funny.
I bet it would be
if funnier. I was smart.
Yeah.
Totally. So anyway, there's like a severe rainstorm. So the Parks come home early and they call when they're like 7 minutes out. So they got to scramble to clean up and like, get these people under control. So the Kims actually trap them in the basement or in the bunker.
Yeah. So the family and the housemaid, they're like fighting, right? They're like, she's coming home. We're going to reveal each other. What's going to happen? And I'll let you continue. I don't know why I had to context.
No,
that.
No. I love it. I love it. Yeah. And go then, ahead. But then, yeah. And then they like, basically, I mean, they brain her basically. And to get her into the bunker.
What'd you say?
Brainer? You know, that means hit hard in the head.
Is that a real expression?
Yes, that is the thing people say.
Oh, Tim, you just brained me.
Yeah.
Has that ever been said?
Well, now you're making me doubt myself.
Good. I think you're full of it.
Probably. So Mrs. Park reveals to the daughter, the art teacher, that her son had a seizure-inducing traumatic experience when he saw a ghost, which was actually the husband of the housekeeper, emerging from the basement, which was filmed in such a really, a very creepy, interesting way that I liked.
Yeah.
The Kims, the poor family, they all managed to sneak out of the house, but not before hearing Mr. Park's offhanded comments about how bad the dad's chauffeur smells. Mm-hmm. But he praises his driving skills and experience. Also, he has this interesting line he says over and over again about how he doesn't cross the line, which is, again, sort of about how he thinks less of people.
I love that, the rich dad's voice. Whenever he yes, talks, he's like, God damn it, talk to me.
So anyway, the Kims go home and they find their home flooded with sewer water and they're forced to shelter in a gymnasium with other displaced people.
These are just really beautiful scenes. Yeah. As they leave the house, they're like running through a severe rainstorm and they're like, oh, did we murder that housemaid? And the daughter and the son are freaking out. And the dad's like, I got a plan. But they go home. And it's just really dramatic, really moving. This
oh, yeah. That's the impetus for his whole thing where he's like, so what is your plan for that housekeeper we might have murdered? And he's like, don't ever make plans. Do you think any of us plan to be in this gymnasium tonight?
Yeah.
Like we cannot afford to make plans, literally. I just, what? Anyway, I think it's your turn.
Oh, at the party?
Yep.
So this is a part of film. It's just like a really good contrast because we spend 20 minutes with like the rainstorm and the flood and they're like, just like, man, our lives are fucked. And there's this whole gymnasium of people and they're like picking out like clean clothes from this big huge pile. And then the son somebody gets a call that the Parks are having a birthday party for the son. So the chauffeur like drives around the family. The son and the daughter both get invited to the party and they're all the rich people, and we see like all now like a bigger community of rich people. And they're all just like really particular about all the little things, and they're like really stressing it out. It's like, and they're like, oh, thank God it rained the other day. That really cleared out the streets. Everything's so cool.
Also fun contrast to his no planning speech.
Right.
And she made this. There was a very weird line that I bumped on. That again, if I was smarter, where she says something like, let's have this fanned out like a famous battle against Japan.
Something like that.
Right. And it was so weird. And I'm like, again, I think that is just how completely oblivious they are to what they say.
So maybe we didn't capture this with our description, but you really feel like with the way all the family is acting, you feel like they're just like have no soul left. They're just like right. So defeated. So they're having a birthday party and the son is with the daughter, but the son is just like looking out at the party, looking out at how happy everyone is, looking at how beautiful everyone is. And he's just like, I gotta go downstairs. And the daughter's like, okay. Oh wait, he asked the daughter, look, do I fit in here? And she's like, what? It's like,
you don't. Sure, whatever.
Yeah, I'm like, sure. And he was like, I just gotta go. So he goes downstairs with that. He goes with his big rock, right? That he just has been carrying around with him. And he goes.
Which it was earlier, there was a guy who kept pissing on their apartment and he grabs the rock to go confront him. They're like, no, don't do that. And we're like, okay, so the rock is gonna come up again.
Okay, so yeah, so the guy, so the son takes the rock, goes into the bunker to face the guy who's like just living down there.
Oh, the scene. Oh boy.
And so he finds the housemaid dead, and the guy who was trapped down there kind of like sprung a trap for him. Like he was hiding, and then he like traps the son and escapes out of the bunker.
But not before totally braining him.
Yeah, before taking the rock and smashing the son's in head twice. It's called a double brain.
Braining, to strike a person hard on the skull.
That's a real word?
To knock out the person's brains. It is an idiom.
Okay, so the guy captive escapes on the bunker and he's fucking pissed because his wife died.
And right, but he's also... we have not covered that he's fucking nuts. Oh, like, yeah. He's been in this bunker for 4 years, and they kind of, in the movie, they were like, first of all, he worships Mr. Park for providing the bunker. And yeah, he's a little gone because of being in isolation for so long. Go on.
So yeah, so he just like walks out, and it's kind of, I mean, it's horrifying. It is a little bit funny as he just starts to enter the party. He's just like in the background, like really bloody with a big knife. And he's like looking around. And then he finds Jessica, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he finds Jessica and stabs her and kills her, which is bad.
Not great.
And then the whole party sort of goes crazy. The son sees the guy in the bunker who he has once seen as the ghost, which gave him his original seizure, and starts seizuring again. So the Park husband and wife have to leave right now. So everybody's freaking out. The poor dad is there and he's seeing his daughter dying. The mom is also being attacked. I don't know if he saw the son at all, but he was obviously not in great shape. And then I'm kind of like not reading this, but just like the sort of pivotal moment of the whole film is when he sees the rich dad go over to the bloody bodies and just like slowly lift them up so he can grab his car keys from underneath them just so he could leave. And that just totally flips a switch in the poor dad's head. Did he just,
because he just like, he doesn't care about Jessica, his daughter dying.
Yeah.
He only cares about himself, and he can't even in that moment not pinch his nose at the smell of it.
Right.
And he's like, fuck you, dude. Fuck you. And he kills him.
So he just fucking kills. It's like, that's like such a crazy part of the moment. And yeah. So the dad kills the rich dad, and then he starts to run. And then, and he escapes, and no one knows where he is. Did I read it?
Yes.
Okay.
Because earlier also they had said that the housemaid, when she came, the fired housemaid came to the house and she cut all the CCTV. So like no one saw him escape.
Right. So where is he? Yeah.
So weeks later, our protagonist, the son, who was brained, which is real.
You can really be brained.
Look it up. So he did not die, which was crazy because we saw him get hit in the head with a rock very hard.
But they treat it in such a way where you believe it. Like they have a whole brain surgery.
He wakes up after brain surgery. He and the mom are convicted of fraud, put on probation. Fair enough. His sister died, which is very sad. And his dad, who's wanted for Mr. Park's murder, has just vanished. No one knows. And of course, the husband of the housemaid, why did he attack in the first place? Nobody knows. It's crazy.
Yeah. I thought they were saying that about just the poor dad. Like, what set him off? Who knows?
No, they're saying that about the original attacker.
Oh.
Bunker guy.
Oh.
Our protagonist keeps watching the Park's home, who's just sold to a German family who doesn't understand what's happening. And he sees a message in Morse code.
Oh. Which was foreshadowed.
It was foreshadowed that for some reason there's a light switch in the bunker that just turns on and off one light.
Yeah.
And this guy, I gotta say, so they even foreshadowed doing that in Morse code, but he writes the most adjective-laden, long sentence.
It was perfect.
Conjunction letter. Nope. Like, why would you do that in Morse code? Say, Dad, safe, love you. Like, that's what I would do in Morse code. It's like, and then I was thinking the other day whilst perched upon my seat, you know, it was just.
I loved it. It was perfect. No flaws.
So it's from, so the dad, he didn't escape. He just went back into the bunker. So he now raids the refrigerator at night. Oh boy. And he also buried the housekeeper in the backyard while the house was still empty. And he's been flicking the light every day with that long ass letter with a lot of details, hoping that his son would see it.
Do you guys want a fun fact about that scene?
No, because we're 2 seconds from the end. So
okay. Oh, no. Well, she's saying the scene we're doing now, Michael, before the end.
Well,
yes, Sam, tell us the fun fact. Right.
So actually, the family that moves in has a bunch of Switzerland stuff. So they're probably Swiss. But he made the joke that it turns out Germans have more than sausages and beer in their fridge. In Germany, the translation was actually made that they were Americans. And he says, it turns out Americans have more than burgers and Coke in their fridge.
That's very funny.
But they're probably Swiss, but they speak German.
All right, get back to the plot.
Yes. So anyway, so the son is still living with his mother in that the basement apartment. So he writes a letter to his father, and it's really heartbreaking because he's like, you know, I'm going to work so hard. I'm going to earn enough money. I'm going to buy that house. So one day you and I can be reunited and we're going to hug.
But it's filmed in such a way where you think it might just be happening. You're like, oh, he did it. He raised the money. He got it.
But it's like, no.
Yeah.
That makes no.
And then, it's like a slow fade to black. He's like, one day I'm going to do it. And that's the end.
It's there's like, no way.
That gets me. That fucking gets me.
So good.
That really fucking gets me. Here's what gets me more is our next segment. What the hell?
It's time for Michelle. Our famous bro call segment.
Our famous bro call segment.
Bring, 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 bring. Oh, Michelle, are you there? Hello.
Oh, hello.
Michelle.
I made a phone with my hand as though this was a visual medium.
Michelle, have you seen the film Parasite before?
I have. I have seen it just recently, so I feel very qualified to speak about the film.
Speak your truth.
I really, really liked it. I thought that it was more of a horror film going into it. The first solid half of the movie to me really felt like the beginning of a horror film, where like the first half of almost all horror films are just lovely and nice and sometimes there's a little conflict and then they get over it. It's kind of like the first half of Titanic. It's just cute movie.
We should mention for the listeners that Michelle is a horror movie aficionado.
Michelle, yes. I don't know if you've seen all the Friday 13s. They usually spend only like a half an hour not killing.
I have seen only one, so maybe I need to.
There's 12, so catch up.
I got 11 more to go.
Yeah.
It's insane that there are 12, but.
Who knows? But yeah, so I really liked it. The latter half of the movie was less gory than I was expecting. I had heard a lot of people say like it's really rough. And so I just thought it was going to be much more like lean into the gore factor. And it was funny in a way that I was not expecting. This movie shot like was a was more than I expected it to be. It also had these weird moments of like cute surrealism, kind of like a Wes Anderson film, but darker.
What are you talking about?
I think the reading the like very descriptive, flowery letter that the dad is writing to his son in Morse code feels very Wes Anderson to me. The housekeeper's husband trapped in the basement for years, falling in love with the owner of the home, feels Wes Anderson to me. I don't know, just like cute surrealist stuff. And I feel like I need to watch it again because I do not think I caught all of the symbolism. Yeah.
Sure.
My friend, John, whom you might know,
mm-hmm.
told me about one of the filming, like framing shots they did, which was try to have like the architectural lines split like down the middle of the screen between people who are rich and people who are poor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was just looking for that like the whole time.
Did you see it?
Yeah. But I really liked it, and I'm still thinking about it like a couple days later.
Which is something.
What grade
do you give it?
Solid A. I think it's an A all around.
Nice. Nice.
I do think that I don't want to watch a dubbed over version.
Yeah, I don't.
No.
Unless it had like really funny. Like if Matt LeBlanc did all the voices, I'd probably watch that version.
Matt LeBlanc is your go-to?
Yeah, that is it's a bit strange.
That was the bit, yeah. Like if a strange guy did it, it would be funny.
Not Henry Feinstein.
Harvey Firestein.
whatever that kid's name is.
That little boy. Michelle, thank you so much for talking.
Michelle,
with us.
Thank you so much for that insightful commentary on this film.
It was good commentary.
Such good commentary. Michael, what grade do you give this film?
I give this movie an A+. This is all I want from a film. I can't be like a film like, oh, Best Parasite is good, but give me some better next time. Try again. No, this is it. This is what I want. This is an A+ film. It's got a great message, but more importantly, it's just super engaging, and it left me just like, whoa. So much that I want to watch this. I've seen this movie twice recently. I want to see it again. It's just a really good film. It's not perfect. Really nothing is. It's A+.
I'm going to give this film an A. It gets a knock for creeping on young girls. It's just my weird thing.
That's just a weird thing of yours, yeah.
This is a weird thing I have, but I agree with you. I think it's a really good film. It also just surprised me, delighted me, touched me in a way that films don't do every day.
Yeah.
I think, you know what? It deserved Best Picture. Michael, who are we sponsored by this week?
Sponsored by Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola, if you're like, I just want a shit ton of sugar right in me now.
Sugar in me. I want the sugar.
Sugar. I saw this rap on Twitter.
Yeah.
And perhaps other people see it where it said like, you know, one can of cola is like 5 donuts. And someone replied like, you know, the only thing I'm learning right now is donuts are way healthier than I thought. anyway, Coke. Yay, Coke. Polar bears and nostalgia.
And Christmas.
Christmas. Don't forget Christmas.
Don't forget Christmas if you're having a Coke.
I will never fucking forget Christmas. Did you just say I would forget Christmas?
No, never.
Jesus Christ.
Coca-Cola. Get ready for fucking Christmas.
Anyway, what are we doing next time, Michael?
I don't know, Michelle. What are we doing next time?
We're doing Die Hard.
Die Hard.
Explosions.
Die Hard.
Explosions.
Can't wait for that. Look forward to that awesome trailer.
That's also fucking Christmas.
It's like a and.
Stay tuned for that trailer cut.
Well, I already said stay tuned for the trailer.
Oh, shit. Okay, do it again.
And?
Cut.
I'm going to leave that whole bit in. All right.
It's Christmas Eve in L.A.
California.
Is Daddy coming home?
choose you?
Well, we'll see what Santa and Mommy can do, okay?
A New York cop, John McLean, has come to see his wife.
I missed you.
Instead, he's going to have to save her.
Sit down.
Within this skyscraper high above the city, 12 terrorists have declared war.
They're about to be taught a lesson in the real use of power.
They're as brilliant.
Because I am interested in the $640 million in your vault.
As they are ruthless.
But I'm telling you, you're just going to have to kill me.
Okay. We do it the hard way.
Now, the last thing McLean wants.
Think, damn it, think.
Is to be a hero.
Where's Holly?
Hey, Tucker!
Where?
But he doesn't have a choice.
What does he think he's doing?
Job.
They have already killed one hostage.
This channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
Lady, do I sound like I'm wearing a pizza?
He's inside? Who is he?
That one here is nice.
Who are you then? You are most troublesome for a security guard.
Sorry, wrong guess, huh? Would you like to go for double jeopardy?
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
But you just destroyed a building.
And I am in charge of this situation.
Well, I got some bad news for you. From up here, that looks like you're in charge of Jack.
He is alone, he is tired, and he hasn't seen Disney Squad from anybody down here.
Hey, pal, how you feeling?
The whole thing's being equal, I'd rather be in Philadelphia.
I want blood, and you have it.
Only John can drive somebody that crazy.
He's an easy guy to like.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
And a hard man to kill. Bruce Willis. Die Hard.
Got invited to the Christmas party by mistake. Who knew?